Hello, friends. Welcome to episode 1172 of the Juice Box Podcast. In this episode of the podcast, Erica Forsyth is back, and we're going to discuss the balance between perfection and health. Learn more about Erica at ericaforsyth.com. Nothing you hear on the Juice Box Podcast should be considered advice, medical or otherwise. Always consult a physician before making any changes to your healthcare plan. When you place your first order for AG1 with my link, you'll get 5 free travel packs and a free year supply of vitamin D. drinkag1.com/juicebox. Don't forget to save 40% off of your entire order at CozyEarth.com. All you have to do is use the offer code JUICEBOX at checkout. That's JUICEBOX at checkout to save 40% at CozyEarth.com. If you're looking for community around type 1 diabetes, check out the JUICEBOX Podcast private Facebook group, JUICEBOX Podcast, type 1 diabetes. But everybody is welcome. Type 1, type 2, gestational, loved ones, it doesn't matter to me. If you're impacted by diabetes and you're looking for support, comfort, or community, check out Juice Box Podcast, Type 1 Diabetes on Facebook. This show is sponsored today by the glucagon that my daughter carries, Gvoke HypoPen. Find out more at gvokeglucagon.com/juicebox. Today's episode of the Juice Box Podcast is sponsored by the Contour Next Gen Blood Glucose Meter. This is the meter that my daughter has on her person right now. It is incredibly accurate and waiting for you at contournext.com/juicebox. This episode of the Juice Box Podcast is sponsored by the Eversense CGM. An implantable 6-month sensor is what you get with Eversense, but you get so much more. Exceptional and consistent accuracy over 6 months, and distinct on-body vibe alerts when you're high or low. On-body vibe alerts? You don't even know what that means, do you? EversenseCGM.com/juicebox. Go find out. Eric, I feel like I haven't heard from you in a while. What happened?
It does feel like it's been a while. January and February happened, I think. It was a busy 2 months. Holidays, yes.
Well, this is better than the last time there was a gap in me hearing from you when you had like some surgery or something like that.
Yes, I had my knee replacement. That was a couple months. Well, it was a couple, 2 years ago, but we didn't talk for a couple of months.
No, because you were busy rehabbing.
That's right.
Apparently you have a life or something like that I'm not completely aware of. So what I did this time, because we're getting back together and we finished up the parenting series, which, by the way, the last episode of it goes up in a couple of days.
Okay.
What I did was I sent you 4 ideas that were sent to me by the moderator of my Facebook group based on things that people had said in the Facebook group. And they're, by the way, literally saying, hey, would you talk to Erica about this? It wasn't just like a abstract question. It was like, you should talk to Erica about this. And I was like, all right.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah. So you picked one of the 4. Tell people what you picked.
So I thought that we could focus on finding the right balance of, you know, living with a chronic disease. But I think we can pair that with perfectionism and trying to go back and forth between what is it like to try to manage your blood sugar from a perfectionist perspective. Mm-hmm. And then how can we move to a more balanced way of managing and living? And whether you're living with it or the caregiver.
Right. Do you know, while you were talking, I did my best Google foo and I typed in finding balance between perfectionism and chronic illness. And a lot of scholarly articles came back. Isn't that interesting?
That is. And I did some Googling and I just am perpetually impressed by how many articles there are on mental health and diabetes. That was not present
even
10 years ago, yeah. You know, is the prevalence of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Nobody was thinking about that, I don't think. So, okay. So what do we have here? We have an everyday situation that some days is more in the forefront and some days more in the background. Always very important. You know, when you're ignoring it, it's to your detriment. And at the same time, if you run around trying to be perfect about it, it's going to burn you out or make you crazy.
Yes.
And so what's the middle of that?
Yes. One of our first few episodes I think we ever recorded was on burnout. And I think we'll definitely touch on that. But I think, and we've talked about, you know, the mental load of being a parent in general. And I also thought, I just realized I'm holding up to Scott my February 2024 issue of Psychology Today.
Oh, look at that.
And what is the title?
Burnout. How about that?
Burnout.
Yeah. So, and that's not specifically yes. about diabetes. No.
No, but in, and I'll probably reference it maybe a few times because I just was reading through it this morning, talking about, you know, the data with parenting with children with a chronic illness. Mm-hmm. And that right currently, as many as 20% of parents identify as feeling burnout, but the rates are higher from parents of children with a chronic illness. And that's according to research from Orebro, Sweden, forgive me for the pronunciation, but 20%. So that's a significant amount without chronic illness.
No chronic illness in the life. And parents are still, one in five parents is like, this has been too much.
Yes.
Gotcha.
Yes. Okay. And we can talk about those factors. Yeah.
So my brain goes immediately to that there's a utopia in your mind when you get married. It's something you expect. And then when you have children, you build a family. And then the further it gets away from your image, the more, I don't want to say disappointing, but maybe the more disappointed you are, and then maybe the more difficult that is then to rev up to do the things that you didn't expect. You know what I mean? Like, it's a very simple idea, but on the 7,000th day in a row that you've made lunch, there's a voice in your head that goes, what is, I'm going to be dead soon. Like, why do I keep making lunch? It the repetition is numbing sometimes. If you take insulin or sulfonylureas, you are at risk for your blood sugar going too low. You need a safety net when it matters most. Be ready with Gvoke HypoPen. My daughter carries Gvoke HypoPen everywhere she goes because it's a ready-to-use rescue pen for treating very low blood sugar in people with diabetes ages 2 and above that I trust. Low blood sugar emergencies can happen unexpectedly, and they demand quick action. Luckily, Gvoke HypoPen can be administered in two simple steps, even by yourself in certain situations. Show those around you where you store Gvoke HypoPen and how to use it. They need to know how to use Gvoke HypoPen before an emergency situation happens. Learn more about why Gvoke HypoPen is in Arden's Diabetes Toolkit at gvokeglucagon.com/juicebox. Gvoke shouldn't be used if you have a tumor in the gland on the top of your kidneys called a pheochromocytoma, or if you have a tumor in your pancreas called an insulinoma. Visit gvokeglucagon.com/risk for safety information. Far too often, we accept the blood glucose meter that someone hands to us. The doctor reaches into a drawer and goes, here, take this one. Is that the one you want? Is it accurate? You have no way of knowing. But if you want accuracy and you want to be confident in the blood glucose readings that you're getting from your meter, you want the Contour Next Gen. It's incredibly easy to get the same meter that Arden uses. Just go to contournext.com/juicebox. That's all you have to do. The Contour Next Gen is easy to use and highly accurate. It features a smart light that provides a simple understanding of your blood glucose levels. And of course, second chance sampling technology that can help you to save money with fewer wasted strips. Contournext.com/juicebox.
And sometimes you might not even be aware of the level of either anxiety or burnout that you're feeling, but perhaps you've noticed that you're really irritable or you're not performing well at work or your relationships are deteriorating. Those are indicators that, like, you might be feeling the frustration of not wanting to make the lunch for the 7,000th day, but you can't quite connect the pieces, but then you're screaming at, you know, your colleagues.
Yeah. No, I, by the way, I'm not kidding. I picked a big number on purpose because I'm talking 25 years into it. You're like, another egg, huh? Okay. I'll make an egg. And then you go to put the fork to your mouth. This is my life. As soon as my food gets warm, the dog has to go outside. I personally feel like he's waiting for my food to hit the table. And then he goes, oh, look how happy that guy looks. I'm going to go bark by the door now. Yeah. Like, so, but with your kids, with your spouse, I mean, even especially too, when you start settling into the norms, and this is just who I am, and this is just who you are, right? And I'm not a bad guy, and you're not a bad lady, but I wish you would do this a little differently, and you wish this about me, and we've talked about it, and it doesn't change, but it's not a deal breaker. But then there it is, every day. You know what I mean? And then you have 1,000 things going right in your life, and you see the 4 things that aren't. Mm-hmm. That, I think, is what puts you into that space. And then you made such a good point a moment ago. You don't necessarily know you're in that space, right? Yeah, and I think, too, when you're, I was going to say angabissen, but I don't know how much Yiddish we're going to get out to people here. But, like, when you're feeling, like, you know, unsteady, it is not your first thought to look at yourself. Mm-hmm. It's always, you always look at what is happening around you. These things, these people, they're making me feel this way. You know what I mean? So.
Yes. The circumstances, mm-hmm. any kind of environmental stressor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'd be fine if it wasn't for my dog barking when I went to eat every day, or mm-hmm. if my husband just wouldn't do this all the time like that. But the truth is if you fix that thing, you would just move on to the next thing in your head, right? That, you
know, yes. Right. And yes, our brains are really, they like to hold on to the negatives and the mm-hmm. the misses.
Yeah.
Instead of, like, we don't fixate on, gosh, I really nailed my dinner bowl list. You know, right. We don't fixate on that.
I'm happy to say here and never tell her it's here, but if she finds it, that's fine with me. Telling you that my wife has a point system in her head that she doesn't know that she has. And it only works in one direction. Mm-hmm. So every time I do something unfavorable, I lose a point. But if I were to cure cancer, I would not gain 10 points. It would be, well, it's about time he cured cancer. And like right
now. Oh, gosh.
It's always felt like that to me. It's not just her, by the way. I think it's personal relationships. Like, it feels like you start with 100 stars and you lose one and lose one and lose one, but you don't gain them back ever. Like, you never, you never give people their flowers. You just go, take them from them. And then to kind of bring this to diabetes, I think that same thing can happen. Like, that's why I try pointing out, like, hey, there's a lot of good that comes from having type 1. I know it's not something you would willfully take type 1 for, but people are often much better at their own health, more in tune with their bodies. You know what I mean? Like,
yes,
that's a big deal. You don't see that in the aggregate, maybe, but as it shakes out over your lifetime, you'll notice it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Mm-hmm. So I don't know. So what do you think? Like, how do we talk to people about understanding that it's going to be difficult and that these things that we just talked about are kind of drag you backwards and backwards and backwards? But at the same time, there's a lot of pluses happening. And while your health goals are very important and can't be ignored, they also can't be the reason that you give in. I don't know. That's a lot, actually.
Yes, it is.
Right.
So we have the understanding. We all know the chronicness of this chronic illness mm-hmm. that maybe feels different than other chronic illnesses because of the consistent decision-making and mindfulness that we have to have around it. And I like that word mindfulness instead of, like, we're having to worry about it. Oftentimes I hear others talk about, like, I'm always worried about my numbers. I'm worried about my daughter's going high. My daughter, I'm just worried, worried, worried. And what's driving that is there's fear, right? There's mm-hmm. the anxiety is being driven by fear of the high or the low.
This episode of the Juice Box Podcast is sponsored by Eversense. And Eversense is the implantable CGM that lasts 6 months. EversenseCGM.com/juicebox. Have you ever been running out the door and knocked your CGM off? Or had somewhere to be and realized that your adhesive was about to fall off? That won't happen with Eversense. Eversense won't get sweaty and slide off. It won't bang into a door jam. And it lasts 6 months, not just a couple days or a week. The Eversense CGM has a silicon-based adhesive for its transmitter, which you change every day. So it's not one of those super sticky things that's designed to stay on you forever and ever, even though we know they don't work sometimes. But that's not the point. Because it's not that kind of adhesive, you shouldn't see any skin irritations. So if you've had skin irritations with other products, maybe you should try Eversense. Unique, implantable, and accurate. So if you're tired of dealing with things falling off or being too sticky or not sticky enough or not staying on for the life of the sensor, you probably want to check out Eversense. EversenseCGM.com/juicebox. Links in the show notes. Links at juiceboxpodcast.com.
And even just changing the language from anxiety, like I'm worried, to I want to be mindful, is reminding yourself, reminding your mind and your body of like, okay, we do need to be mindful and intentional, but what I don't want is the motivation to be driven by fear. And I will kind of get through. I think it's important to talk about the perfectionism and how that is develops. But sorry, go ahead.
But does that stem, like, I feel like what I hear you saying is that because there are so many decisions to make so consistently, that I'm being put into an anxiety-inducing situation every 5 minutes or every hour or a couple of times a day, even depending on how, you know, well I have things balanced for myself. And so you never really get a chance to, what, like go into that, because I don't have that thing, but my wife talks about it. She said I talked in my sleep the other night and I said something very loud and she described how her adrenaline popped up. Mm-hmm. And then she couldn't go back to sleep. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my God, like I swear to you, you could bang a garbage can in my bedroom and I'd be like, what is happening? Put that garbage can away. And then I'd go right back to sleep.
Uh-huh.
But that's not that way for everybody. Because you hear this all the time, by the way.
It's, yes.
It's a thing in the community that you hear frequently. The idea about like, oh, it's been said that people with type 1 diabetes make X amount more decisions a day than everybody else. And I've always just thought like, oh, why does that matter? But I think that's because of my personality. I don't think of it that way. But a lot of people can be drugged down by that.
Well, and I think in the beginning, everyone, regardless of personality or coping mechanisms, are going to experience that level of, you know, the nervous system is on, kind of flares up and you're in fight or flight, like trying to make these decisions. I don't know, is one unit going to help? Is two? Is it too much? You know, those types of things. Mm-hmm. So you're in, like, the cortisol level is pumping pretty consistently in the beginning. And so what we want to address is, over time, how can the cortisol levels be reduced by not only just experience, but also mindset of, does it have to be in 80 to 120, 95% of the time? Mm-hmm. Because I think people do feel like, and you know, I'm not a medical doctor, and the ADA recommends 70 to 180, 70% of the time, but there really isn't data yet for long-term CGM use to back that up. But they're like, that's maybe a good window.
Mm-hmm. It's a tough world where you need to make a health decision for a mental health decision, because you are trading one for the other at some point. Because, I mean, listen, you've had diabetes a long time. Arden's had it now for, my God, geez, how long? Almost 18 years. Wow. Is that true? Yeah, wow. I don't want her blood sugar to be 180. Do you know what I mean? Like, if it is, we get it back and that's fine and we don't cling to it. But honestly, if you take the mental health out of it and look at the physical health, that is not a thing you want. And so there it is again, right? Like, and you mentioned the cortisol. The goal is not to like learn to live in it. The goal is to not have it happen, right? Because learning to live in it just probably just kill me when I'm 50. But I'll be like, people will be like, oh my God, he was so cool under pressure. But you're not cool under pressure. If you're still feeling it, you're just making good decisions in a bad situation. That makes sense?
Yes. Yes. Okay. And I often will ask clients who are struggling with this very issue of, you know, feeling like they need to live in this perfect line or zone or range. But then I say, you know, at what expense, right? Like, are you living in a heightened state of cortisol pumping? You cannot sleep. You cannot function.
Right.
You're hysterical, crying. Now, I'm not talking about like the initial grief stages, and that is normal.
Yeah,
in the beginning, it just is, and that will subside. Mm-hmm. But years and years and years of living with this kind of, I need to be perfect. It needs to be perfect, but that is not sustainable, and that's where you get into the burnout phase. Obviously,
I didn't mean earlier to say that I wasn't ever like that. I'm just not like that now. But in the beginning, I was crying like every day. For years, by the way, like a couple of years, I would just in the afternoon, I tell people all the time, my wife would come home and be like, oh, I didn't have a chance to get a shower. Then I'd get in the shower so I could cry so nobody could hear me. Mm-hmm. Then I'd come out and I'd be like, hey, everything's great. But it wasn't. Even on the third day of Arden's diagnosis in the hospital, I recognized what a shift this was going to be, like to my own personal health. And even I remember saying to my wife, do you think we'll get divorced because of this? Like just a couple of days, because I was extrapolating it out.
Yes.
And I was like, oh my God, like she's not what we thought she was now. Right. So you have to configure that in your mind. We could kill her with the medication. If we don't give her enough of the medication, we could kill her. There's going to be the possibility of long-term complications. We won't see them while we're happening. So they'll always be in the back of our head. Mm-hmm. We're going to disagree. We're going to argue. We're going to be short on sleep. We're going to be all jacked up on cortisol, which isn't a thing I talked about 20 years ago, but you knew you were going to be on edge, you know? And I kept thinking like, oh, this is how we're going to get divorced. Because it is a coin flip still to get divorced, by the way. And then it wasn't 6 weeks later that the endocrinologist said, the incidence of divorce in America is 1 in 2, but if you have a chronically ill child, it goes to 2 in 3. And I was like, oh, more good news. Yeah. Yay. So,
yes. And when you're in that stressful state, worst case scenario thinking can feel real. Like that's like, it's really going to happen.
Yeah. Oh no, it definitely felt like it was going to happen. Mm-hmm. I was like, well, it felt like a self-fulfilling prophecy to me. I was like, well, this is it. All the cards are out on the table. They all point to this. You know, we're going to flip one over one day and one of us is going to get pissed about something and say something we can't take back. And that's going to be the end of it. Like it really is what it felt like. Mm-hmm. But day to day, that same pressure exists if you're managing type 1 for a child or if you're an adult living with it. Like when am I going to experience something that just pushes me over an edge I don't come back from? And I just say to myself, my A1C is 8. I don't care, you know?
Yes. Well, I think in that sentence and question, it is the day-to-day, which is so different from, we used to have this evaluation every 3 months with the A1C. Mm-hmm. We did not have this data. And I think there is this shift, just like, I know, you know, with social media and all this instant, you know, news and numbers, like feed, like you, if you're using that data to determine your sense of like self-worth, there's these two pieces, right? There's the data to determine, am I going low or am I having long-term complications? And then you can connect it to, I'm a terrible person, or I'm a terrible diabetic, or I'm failing my child. And that's the piece. I mean, there are the real truths of having lows and long and highs. And that is real. So I'm not dismissing that. But where we're talking is the gray area of what is that data? How is that defining you as a human being?
I'm following you completely. Yeah. I know it feels convoluted, but I don't find it to be when you're saying it. You know what is a weird example? You ever seen those jump videos, the scare videos where people like turn a corner and scare a lady and she's like, and goes crazy. And then they just do it to her over and over and over again. If you did that to me, I would punch you. I wouldn't go back and go, I would come forward at you. And so it's personality driven. Like I just had a conversation with someone the other day about their young son, 12 years old, a little bit in his hands, a little bit in his parents' hands. One of the parents has type 1 diabetes, but the kid's A1C was in the 8s. And then G7 came out. They put the Clarity app in with the G7 app. The kid's now seeing it sort of like a goal and he got his A1C down to 6.1. This 12-year-old boy, like by himself, amazing, right? Because his personality, how he's wired, when you jump scare him, he comes forward. And now you put that same technology in someone's hands who goes backwards and they go, oh, look at me. Now I'm being judged every day by my app. This is terrific. And he thought, oh, this is great. I can battle with this and have a good time, like a game. And so you don't know who you are. And again, like we were talking about earlier, as it's happening to you, you can't step out of yourself and go, oh, I'm just reacting to this wrong. Mm-hmm. This could be really good information for me if I just change the way I'm perceiving it. And is that right?
Yes. Well, and I would, as a practical tip, I would, if you are looking at the Clarity app or any of the apps that are connected to your meters, I mean, your meters, your CGMs or your pumps, if you're looking at that constantly and looking at the trends or the percentages, and that is too much data for you, and that is leading you to shame-based thinking, I would definitely encourage, like, that's great information. Maybe you could look at your clarity report once a week, like when you get your weekly email, or pull back a little bit.
Weekly, not daily. Don't make yourself, like, if you're feeling shaken up by it, don't keep doing the thing that makes you feel shaken up by it.
Correct. Correct.
Isn't that great advice for so many things in life that nobody takes that advice about? Like, shouldn't I also not pick up my FanDuel app? Like, do you know what I mean? Right? Like, how do you... Sometimes we feed ourselves the exact thing we know we don't need. And I didn't use feed to, like, invoke food, but maybe there too. And so, like, it's very... I don't know, like, I once said to somebody, it feels like you're happier when things are shaken up. And then as I thought about that person, I think, well, that's how they grew up. Like, they grew up in a household that was, like, always, like, it felt frenetic, right? And off kilter, and nothing was ever stable. And so when things get good and stable, that person gets uncomfortable because that's not where they're comfortable because they didn't grow up like that. There's so many different ways to get you. So I come into your office because nobody's going to come in and say, hey, I need therapy. I'm great under pressure. so someone comes in and says, hey, look, I've got all this great data. I know it's valuable for me, but I can't stop looking at it as, you know, condemnation. Is that a self-confidence? Like, where do you start with that when you try to help them?
So I would want to understand, how are they perceiving themselves in other areas of their lives, in their work? I think we talked about the different types of perfectionism. There's the self-oriented perfectionism where you have the expectation that you will perform and perfectly in all areas. And then there's the socially prescribed perfectionism where you think others around you are expecting you to be perfect. Mm-hmm. So I would look at those two factors in other areas of your life. Do you have that in your relationships, in your work, in your own self-image, body image? Or is it just with diabetes? Oftentimes you might see it in other areas. So you'd start there. And then I would want to understand what is the self-talk going on? So if you are feeling like, gosh, I cannot stay in range all the time, and therefore I'm telling myself I'm not good enough.
Right.
Again, medical data aside, I wouldn't be necessarily looking at that, but we'd be looking at that to see how is that prescribing who you are and how much are you listening to that, and where can we find moments for truth and grace and compassion in kind of the broader sense.
When I talk to people who are, what's the phrase I would use here? Realists. Right? So somebody who's not willing to ignore the idea that a 250 blood sugar is bad for me, but they also live in the world where their cortisol's jumped up and they're having these self-doubts and, you know, and all of this stuff is happening. They're feeling, you know, they're feeling like everything is a judgment, they're failing, that whole thing. So when you feel that way, but you can't let go of the reality of what those numbers mean to your health, that's where I see people get stuck the most. They seem like ping pong balls, like flying back and forth. You know what I mean? Like, I know I should be kinder to myself, but I'm dying here. But I'm going to go crazy before I die. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and that's the part I feel when I see people in that space, that's the one I feel the worst for, I think. You know what I mean? Because it's not like you're tricking yourself into being upset. You're really upset for a good reason. And the thing that you're trying to avoid, it's real. Like, so, I mean, it would be no different than if you and I were in this house together and there was a guy outside with a gun and I was like, oh, Erica, don't worry about it. You know what I mean? Like, and we'd all feel great for 10 minutes till he came flying through the door with his gun pointed. And they were like, oh, you know what? We probably should have thought about that. So, like, that's how it feels to me.
Yes.
No? Yeah.
So if the person, with the 250, we would want to look at, okay, what is, yes, we all want to be in range and have, you know, an A1C under 7. So that's like the goal. But what are the behaviors that are leading to the the ups and downs or the consistent highs? Mm-hmm. And is it burnout coming from perfectionism? Is it ambivalence, which maybe, I guess we're kind of talking about that right now, but I know we'll get into that later. And is it not knowing how to manage? Is it the depression, you know, there's no real motivation? And is that due to the diabetes? Is it in general depression? And so I would want to kind of suss that out. Like what is, and it could be a combination of all of those things. Mm-hmm. So knowing how to do it, having the motivation, not really caring. And those can be a messy, you know, trio, right? And then cycle of all impacting to be feeling like crap physically and emotionally, not knowing how to manage.
Right. So from my perspective, as a person who's raised a 2-year-old to a 20-year-old, and I've gone from not knowing what I was doing, being incredibly upset all the time, having all the feelings that we've described, to slowly figuring it out, and now to getting to a point where, honestly, I don't really know what you could ask me about diabetes where I wouldn't be like, oh yeah, just do this. Right. Like, so, and that took a long time. People get to fast forward a little bit listening to the podcast because I had to figure it out so I could come here and talk about it. You guys just get to hear somebody talk about it and go, oh, okay, I'll do that. You know, and which is terrific. But what I keep thinking while you're talking is maybe you got to fake it till you make it. Like maybe you have to say to yourself, I know 180 is not great. I know 250 is way higher than I want to be. I 300, my God. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I know all that's true, but I believe that I'm not going to be there one day. And this is part of my learning process. Like, while I'm learning, I can't get 100 on every test.
Yes.
So I'll accept a B plus, I'll accept a C minus as this is where I am, but here's where I'm going. And when I get there, I won't see 250 blood sugars anymore. And I want to tell you, between you, me, and everybody listening, I do not know the last time Arden's blood sugar has been over 250. Mm-hmm. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, unless there's like a failure of something or something like that. But day-to-day making decisions, we just don't see that. You know, I would call 180 a spike, like a pretty, like, drastic spike for her. But that's because we know what to do, we know when to do it, and we do those things.
Yes.
Now, back in the day, 250 was a Tuesday. Do you know what I mean? Right. Like, I would have been like, 250, we're killing it. Like, it's not 350. Let's go.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, this is going our way. Mm-hmm. But if I could look back and give my backward-looking advice, would be that if you're working towards it and you're getting good information and you're taking meaningful steps, you will actually get to a point that I've just described. And honestly, the easier you are yourself, the more grace you give yourself in the moment, the more you're able to say, yeah, it didn't go this way today, but I know I'm getting to it. I think the quicker you'll get there, because now you're spending time learning and moving forward instead of spending time beating yourself up and woe is me and hand-wringing and stuff like that. Does that all make sense to you?
Yes, because shame, as we've talked about before, likes to keep you there.
Yes.
It does not want it to shift.
Yeah.
So when, and you know, I certainly have fluctuations and it'll be, you know, whatever number. And I will say, oops, like that was I forgot to pre-bolus for dinner tonight because I had 18,000 things going on.
Right.
But I'll catch it up. But that also comes from 34 years of living with it. And knowing how, and like all the things, all the factors, right? Like the protective factors. But I could, where, and I certainly have been here in my past, be like, oh my gosh, I'm at this number, I'm in the twos, and this is going to affect me long term. How did I do this? I'm a terrible person. And you can get stuck there.
You almost become a parasite in your own story. And yes. I don't know how do I mean that? Oh, there are some parasites that go into animals that rewire the animal's brain to poop on its own food so that other animals will eat the food with the parasite in it so that the parasite can spread itself apart. That's an actual thing.
That's so crazy. I don't even want to know why you know that.
Okay, well, we all now, anybody who's listening now knows why I know this stuff. But so there's a parasite that can go into an animal. it will tell the animal, like literally, like crap on the food, because I know other animals will come by and eat the food, and then I'll get to spread myself out and go on my journey. You kind of become that in your own life when you have the self-doubt hits you and almost the feeling bad feels normal, like I talked about a minute ago. Mm-hmm. And so you almost make yourself keep feeling bad. And also, when you're feeling badly about your health, you can do this thing where you, like, again, like we talked about earlier, isn't it interesting how this all comes together? And I don't mean for it to. You can point to a doctor and go, it's her fault. She didn't tell me. That doctor I spoke to, he could have told me about pre-bolusing, but he didn't. So my blood sugar spikes, not my fault, it's their fault.
Like or my parents' fault.
My parents didn't tell me. They left me alone too long with it. They didn't stay with me till I figured it out. They stayed with me too long and made me, you know, what's the word when you're now can't help yourself? Helplessness. It's a psychological word that I just lost. It's not going to be important. Damn
advocacy?
No. I know. I'll think
autonomy?
Of it. It'll pop up into my head like 10 minutes after we're done. I'll be like, gah! But like
agency, you know, agency.
Yeah, they took away my agency, and so it was always them doing it. It's their fault that I don't know how to do it because they were doing it for me. Like no matter what happens to you, that's the thing you're gonna blame. That is just such a human thing. Like mm-hmm. I mean, you go find a billionaire somewhere right now and be like, tell me who's screwing you, and they're gonna have a list. They're gonna be like, well, here's what's happening to me. Like, but I'm like, nothing's happening to you. You have $1 billion. It's all going well. Like just. Try looking at the good things, but we can't do that. Like, we never do that. Something's always wrong. It's always something else or someone else's fault, because that's the only way you can sometimes stop from feeling like this. Like, Look what I'm doing to myself.
To avoid the shame, we blame. Yeah.
Oh, is it a t-shirt slogan? Did I just go really
to avoid? I don't know, but yeah, it is a common phrase for sure.
To avoid the shame,
we can blame.
We can others, blame. Oh, right? Mm-hmm. Nice. I'm putting that on a t-shirt. What a shirt. Can you imagine you walking down the street, people are like, what does that say?
Yeah.
And then they start going, oh, I do that, don't I? But that's the point too, is it's that feeling of like, oh, look what I do. When I feel ashamed, I blame other people. It's not what you do. It's what everyone standing on 2 feet does. That's the fake it till you make it, give it away because you know you're headed in the right direction part of it. It's like, this is just how people's brains work. Like, don't get stuck in this part. And I know that's easier said than done, but that's the clue, though. I mean, you're almost willfully keeping yourself here. And eventually, you know, the secret is most people get out of it eventually. It's how long you're stuck in it that is really the thing I think you have more sway over than you think.
Yes.
Because, you know what I mean? I interview a lot of people, and I enjoy talking to a 65-year-old person whose story when they were 15, you would go, oh God, if I heard that story while they were 15, I'd think this person's done. Like, they're never getting out of this. But they do, you know? Like, I don't know. I don't know what the answer, obviously, these are just conversations. I don't think there's a hard and fast answer to any of this, but.
Right. You know. And I think that the sooner, and this might be a lifelong process, to realize that blaming is a dead end and you will get stuck in that. Not that conversely, I want to say, well, you should just shame yourself, because it could be read that way, right? Like, Well, don't blame others, but shame yourself, because shame is not a productive, proactive feeling. But we often get stuck in that. And I know as parents, as caregivers, that can be a very common experience. And particularly when you're managing the blood sugars, feeling like you're responsible for your child's health. And so it's naturally, you know, a feeling to be like, oh my gosh, I mismanaged their blood sugar. Shame on me. Now they're going to have, they're going to lose their vision.
Does it have to be shame? Does taking responsibility have to be shame?
No. But that's where
our minds go.
Our minds go because then like a parent would say, or I would say, if my children don't have type 1, but if I were to make a mistake that caused them pain in the moment, it was on me.
Because there has to be a reason, because that's how black and white we are. That's why everyone comes on and they're so adamant to tell that diagnosis story, because they want to show you where they got diabetes. This wasn't my fault. It's Coxsackie virus. And by the way, that's true, but they need to say it out loud, and they want to tell other people, oh, it's about the reason. Like, I need a reason. This is not just about diabetes, too. People need, that's why everybody works in black and white. That's why the ambiguity is not comfortable to people. Is that right? People like an answer. That's why they want to be on a team.
We do. Yeah. We want to ascribe a meaning and a reason behind things. And not, I mean, you can get stuck in black and white thinking or sure. all or nothing thinking for sure. Mm-hmm. And where you want to move out of, because oftentimes it's all bad or it's all on me, when the alternative could also be true, but it's hard to retrain your brain. And that's where, you know, retraining your neural pathways and your thought patterns is really significant and helpful. And you can do that in therapy.
So to use another example, oh my God, I see it. Okay. So there are some people who will tell you it's just diabetes. There's nothing you can do about it. It's going to go up and down. Your A1C is not really in your control. I've given it up to God or whatever, like saying you want to do. And that makes you comfortable that you're not hurting yourself. And then there's an opposite side, say like a very keto diet person who's taking in 10 carbs a day and they're barely using any insulin, but they have a lot of stability. They know if they tread away from that edge that they've found their comfort in and they start letting more carbs in, then they're going to have more variability. Then they're not going to know what's going on. So they have to defend their position. Mm-hmm. You have to defend that position as the right decision because, look, it works out well for me. Just like the person on the other side can defend that this isn't on me, it's on something else. And both of them are trying to avoid feeling like it's their fault if something goes wrong. And on the one side, you get to take credit for the decision you've made. I'm going to eat very low carb. I'm doing this thing. And on the other side, you get to take credit for believing in a different power that's in charge of you and not yourself. And I'm in the middle here telling people you have to understand what foods impact you, how they impact you, how to use your insulin. And that uncertainty is uncomfortable for the edges. But there's also a great amount of people who are very comfortable in that I want the knowledge so I can decide. Mm-hmm. And these are the three different psychological like norms that you find around diabetes. Did I just figure all that out while we were talking or am I wrong? Am I making sense?
Yes, I think I can almost see you thinking about all of the stories.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm doing.
All of the comments from the Facebook group and kind of synthesizing.
Yeah. I just acted like my own AI for a minute. I just fed
right,
everything.
Right, like you just did some research, like yeah. data collection.
I was like, wait, I know what I'm seeing. Because I don't care if you eat low carb. I think that's terrific. I don't care if you are like, hey, my A1C is 7.5 and I'm happy and this is the best I'm going to do. If that's you, then that's terrific. But I'm trying to see the psychological side of it. Because then there's also people who are like, look, sometimes I eat low carb because it's easier. And sometimes my blood sugar gets out of whack and I say, eh, whatever. And like, and I don't think there's anything wrong with any of those three perspectives. But I understanding where they're coming from is just very interesting. Because I've heard these stories so many different ways, so many different times. Mm-hmm. And in the end, it's just all about humans and how they react to things. And we do fall into buckets to some degree. Mm-hmm. And I think specifically mm-hmm. about this, these are kind of the three buckets. You know, I have found myself recently, as I'm recording those cold wind episodes mm-hmm. and talking more about like how doctors should talk to patients and stuff like that. Every time I get done with one of those conversations, I have this like enduring thought, almost like when I get done talking to you, I think, I don't know if this is a thing you can ever make black and white to just tell somebody, like, follow these steps and you'll feel better. Like, that's mm-hmm. why I think I believe in the therapy so much, because you need somebody to walk you through it. And while you don't even know you're being walked through it. But to this other thing with the cold wind, and you see all these people who, like, became a nurse or became a doctor and are still delivering substandard care and their understanding's not that. And when I get to the end of the conversations, I always think to myself, so it's a human problem. And then everything's a human problem on one level or another, right? Like it's our ability or inability or desire or, you know, to work hard at something and make an impact. Or and some of us are just like, look, it's just a job. I'm going to show up. I'm going to do the thing and I'm going to leave. I'm not trying to make an impact.
Right.
And you mix that all together in a soup and you get society. I should have gone to college. I might have enjoyed it.
Oh gosh. Yes. I mean, it's human nature, but in going back to kind of these buckets, it's, you know, where do you feel comfortable? Is it control? Like, we all want to feel like we're in control. Mm-hmm. And I know we've talked about this before too, of like, but if I don't know how to control, and we can't perfectly control diabetes, can we stay in that gray zone of, I'm going to do what kind of works for me. I'm going to make mistakes and I'm going to have to move on. Or do I have to live in the rigid line, you know, on the rigidity of, it has to be this way. And if it's not, then I'm going to mess up and I'm going to feel terrible about myself.
All these different decisions are just different levels of you giving your brain and the way it works the freedom to do what it does. Like, I don't know if that makes sense or not. Like, if I took a low-carb person with a 4 or 5 A1C and I tried to drag them over to the other side and said, hey, you're not going to worry if your blood sugar goes to 200, they couldn't make sense of that. Like, that would not work for them. It's not how their brain works. If I took the person who said, hey, you know, once in a while, it is what it is, and I made them eat low-carb forever, they couldn't deal with that. And I think the people in the middle, if you took them to either side, would say, this is too rigid one way or the other. I need a blend. I need gray. Like, you know, that's so interesting. We should rename this episode, Watch Scott Understand Everything We All Got in Our First Psych Class in Our Freshman Year of College, as if it was a new idea that the world just found. It really is interesting for me because I've learned about life the same way I learned about diabetes. Like, I didn't ask anybody for help. I didn't go to a class. I just picked my way through it. And I didn't go to college. Like, so as I live, I know there are times I see things and I'm like, I bet you this was described to somebody in, like, you know, their sophomore year psych class. I'm seeing it like a newborn sometimes. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And maybe that's valuable because it can be explained to all the other people who didn't end up in college listening to this. Because once you understand how people think, you stop being mad at them. You know what I mean? You're just like, oh, this is just who they are. Like, it's, and I know it's a simple thing that people say all the time, but once you really see it, when somebody's doing something and you don't ascribe like bad actor like vibes to them, like, oh, they're doing this on purpose, or she's trying to make me feel this way or something like that. Once you realize that's not what's going on, life just gets so much easier. And I wonder if diabetes couldn't be the same way. Mm. That makes sense?
Yes. You know, you're making me think of, you know, one of my faves, Brené Brown, who did research on and did data collection on people's stories. Okay. And that's how she came up with the, you know, the concept of vulnerability. I mean, she didn't come up with that concept, but how that is really challenging for people to be vulnerable based on all of the interviews and research she did and did data collection based on people's stories, which is what you're doing, you know, through the podcast and the group.
I just have always felt like, I know there's more to life than I understand. And I like to wonder what it is. If you ask me my favorite thing to do, I know I've said this before, but like going out to the end of my understanding and wondering what's beyond it is one of my favorite things to do. And you can't just do it in your head because you only know what you know. You have to talk to other people and listen to other people, and then instead of judging them, think, where did that come from? Like, you know, and not be upset about it. Like, if it came from a bad place or a good place, it's like, whatever, this is where it came from. That's why I love the After Dark episodes sometimes too. People who are willing to like come on and say like, hey, I'm a heroin addict. Here's my story.
Be vulnerable.
Yeah. And let that out there. And if you're willing to meet that vulnerability with your own kind of openness, then you can grow from it. Like, I actually found myself thinking, it's funny, I was thinking about this in the shower this morning, but I didn't know I was thinking about this. I kept wondering, how could I pass on my life's experiences to my kids so that they can fast forward a little bit? But I can't think of a way to do it, because sharing my experience as a story only goes so far. They actually need to go through this too. This is why we progress so slowly, you know, and maybe that's by design or necessary. You know what I mean? Like, maybe if we kept leaping forward, we wouldn't be able to readjust fast enough. Oh, maybe that's what we're seeing with social media too, right? Like, technology keeps leaping forward and people can't catch up. And then we're all anxious because this isn't the soup we're supposed to be swimming in.
Well, that's right.
Yeah.
you have to do the work yourself. And while, yes, it would be so wonderful if we could say, here's exactly how to live a balanced life living with a chronic illness or caregiving for your child with diabetes, take a walk, go outside. Like we, you know, everyone knows all those tools.
Yeah.
Take a break, do deep breathing, be kind to yourself. But it really is slowing down to understand the process that you are undergoing and doing the work yourself, mm-hmm. which is not an easy answer.
Right. I almost wonder if it doesn't help you to like take a large step back and say to yourself, can I really be mad at somebody in 1950 for how they treated women when that's how it was done? And now that we've moved forward, we see that's not the way to do that. Like, right? And you can see, like, we've made progress. And I guarantee you that in another 70 years, you'll look back on the, you know, 2024 and think, oh, I can't believe that's what we thought about those things. And then, you know, but then understand that along the way, there were these people's lives that were, you know, finite and shorter, given the grand scheme of things. And that they were stuck in one thinking, you know, pattern, and they probably were never going to get out of it. Or they'd grow a little bit by the time they got to the end. And their growth would rub off on their children a little bit. Their children would start slightly ahead of them and grow a little more. And we keep going. And if you could take that idea and flip it back on your diabetes, then I think that's what I'm saying. I think you're faking it till you make it. Like, you're like, I know I'm not perfect, but I'm not bad and I'm trying. And then level up and then do it again. But don't judge yourself on what happened in 1950. Just go, okay, 3 years ago, I didn't know to pre-bolus, but I know now. And let's level that up and keep going and hopefully do that quickly enough that you avoid, you know, catastrophic like health concerns. Mm-hmm. And so, wow, there's no answer, but that's the answer. It's all in there. Just listen to that over and over again until it makes sense to you. Or go see a therapist. And again, well, we're going to call this episode Watch Erica, Watch Scott Figure Out Common Ideas. sometimes when she looks at, like, Erica and I see each other while we're doing this, and sometimes there's this look on her face that I remember my mom, like, looking at me like, oh, look, he figured it out.
It's an encouraging expression. Yes.
She's like, dummy's getting it. I see it happening. No. No, I know you don't think that way.
No, it is. It's fun to watch. Yeah, process.
I can never tell if you're like, I'm glad I have these conversations with him, or if you think I should get on a podcast where somebody understands more.
No, it's good stuff.
Good. It's excellent. I appreciate doing this with you so much. Like, if I just sat down by myself and tried to think my way through this, I wouldn't get as far as I do when I'm with you. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. And I'm getting tired. I'm warm from thinking. Do you know what I mean by that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
My thinker is overheating.
It's hard work. It's hard work. Yeah, it is.
Plus, how hard is it not to look at me and think, look how thin Scott looks. This is amazing.
I mean, pretty soon, I'm not going to see you.
Oh, no, that's not going to happen. But it's funny, like, talking about how your brain works. Like, I'm focusing at looking at you, because if I look at myself, I start going, I don't even look like myself. Like, and you can feel like you can feel yourself drifting away a little bit. And then you can go, oh, I should have done this sooner. Or how come I didn't figure this out earlier? Like, do you know what I mean? Like,
yes. Shame pops in.
Yeah,
right,
I feel
there.
Ashamed immediately. Actually, but I have felt that way, but then turned it. Then I just turned it on the pharmaceutical industry. I was like, well, they should have come up with that drug faster. But I did say to my wife the other day, do you ever get sad that this drug didn't exist sooner? Because we're 50 now. Like, mm-hmm. what if they would have come out with these GLPs when we were 30? Like, would we have had a different life? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'll never know.
I do, because I ask that about CGMs and automated insulin pumps.
I bet you do, right? Yeah. Oh, I had that conversation with someone the other day. Guy's had diabetes for like 45 years or something like that. And I asked him, do you ever wonder about what your life would have been like if you were born now instead of then? And he said he tries not to think about it.
Yes. And I think just the question you asked, why didn't I do this sooner? Of course, as soon as you want it, as you're starting to have a healthier mindset of how you view yourself, think about others and the world, the old way of thinking, shame still wants to pop back in. So yeah. It just still is trying to, like, oh, you shoulda, coulda, woulda.
As I felt it coming, I got in front of it. Because I was like, this isn't my fault. Like, I mean, honestly, Erica, I'm not a doctor, quite obviously. Obviously, I'm not educated in any way if you've been listening for the last 50 minutes. The GLP has made a big difference. I must have a GLP deficiency because I have not drastically changed how I eat. I had pizza this week. I just want to tell you, I bought a pizza, ate it one night, got up the next day, had it for lunch, and then had it for dinner a third day. And I lost a pound this week. So like, you know, like, and not to say that I eat like that all the time, but this week I wasn't eating very much and I didn't have a flavor for anything. And I thought, well, maybe it's better if I eat something than nothing. So I'll, you know, I got this pizza. Not the point. The point is that even on a GLP, I'll lose a pound this week having eaten six slices of pizza spread out over 3 days. If I would have done that without the GLP, I easily would have gained 4 or 5 pounds. And so it's not a thing I couldn't have done it. The thing didn't exist. It's so funny how my brain was willing to leap over that truth. Like, this was not a thing you could have done 20 years ago, Scott. This didn't exist 20 years ago. And I went right to, why didn't I do this? Like, I let go of all the reasons why to blame myself for a second. Then I stopped myself and I said, this isn't my fault. It's Eli Lilly's fault for not making Zepbound sooner than or whatever. I don't know. And I let it go. But there are people who will, they get stuck in that pothole right there. Oh, it's my fault. Yeah.
And why didn't I make this change sooner? Why didn't, like, even, you know, you said the pre-bolusing. I mean, I didn't pre-bolus for the first 25 years of my diabetes life. But I didn't know. And that's okay. And now, and so, like, when you, as soon as you hear yourself going, why didn't I coulda, shoulda, just say, okay, where are you right now in this moment? Going back and doing a mindful exercise or doing the grounding that we've talked about and bringing yourself to the present. And you can say, wow, look where I am today.
Yeah.
Like, the journey is right now.
Right. I talked to a guy the other day who had diabetes for over 4 decades. And he told me that in the last handful of years, I taught him to pre-bolus his meals.
I honestly might have heard about pre-bolus for the first time through the podcast.
Yeah,
honestly,
it's such a stupid idea. Like I used to talk about it like this. I used to say, if I taught you to drive and you'd never driven before, and I said, okay, Eric, as we approach this curve, I only want you to push down on the brake halfway and then go through the curve. And I said, if you were doing that and you pressed down the brake halfway and saw you were going to go off the road into a stone, would you just hold the brake down halfway and go, that's what the guy said to do? Like, or would you push harder and say, I don't want to hit the rock off the side of the road? But so many times with diabetes, we just go, that's what they told us to do. I guess I'll crash. You know what I mean? And then tomorrow I'm going to get a new car and crash again. And they over and over again. And how much of that is mixed in with, like, the godly way we see physicians. So the guy didn't tell me, the lady didn't tell me, so it's obviously not a reason or a rule, so I'll just keep doing what they said over and over again. It's fascinating. It really is. Like, how do you not say to yourself, I give myself insulin at noon, I eat at noon, my blood sugar goes up. What if I gave it to myself 5 minutes before that or 10 minutes before that? What would have happened? Again, that's me. If you jump scare me, I'm going to punch you in the face. Like, so when I saw the thing happening with the blood sugars, I was like, that's not right. Like, I always think that. I always think that's not right and they don't know. But that's just, but that's an abundance of, I would call it self-confidence.
Yeah.
I'm sure somebody else would call it narcissism. That's between me and my therapist. And, but I trust myself more than other people. But I also had to count on myself growing
up. That's right.
And I had some wins along the way. So I had a reason to trust myself. I've made decisions in the past before that have gone well. So I think, well, I'll try it again. It worked out the last time. Let me see what Scott's brain thinks this time. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I wonder, I'm sure, I know we're totally now in a different topic, but not really. But with the pre-bolus concept, I'm sure you and Jenny have talked about this before. Did the pre-bolus, I mean, I used to pre-bolus with regular insulin and it was like 30, we had to give our injection 30 minutes before we ate. But then when we transitioned to Humalog, fast acting.
Jenny blames the naming.
Yeah. Is that what it is? Because I feel like then the concept just left.
Yeah. They told us it was fast acting insulin. Yeah. So we stopped talking about the timing of the insulin.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you're old enough to remember that. Yeah, it's just a naming. Again, that's a human mistake. It really is. Like, when you listen to that Grand Round series that she and I are making, Everything that a doctor does that throws you on the wrong path is usually a communication error. Just not knowing how to talk about things and see the implications of the words you're using. Super simple. I mean, nobody knows how to talk, so it's not super simple.
Yeah.
Diagnosing it is simple. Like, I see what's happening. I don't know how to get somebody to fix it. I also don't know how you... It's funny because a scientist called it fast-acting insulin or faster-acting insulin or something
because it
like
was
that.
Faster than regular.
Yeah, yeah. But was, yeah. Again, a person who you should not put in charge of artistic endeavors. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you don't ask a structural engineer to write a poem because their brain doesn't work that way. So you should get the structural engineer to build the bridge and then have an artist come in and call it something.
Name it.
Yeah, yeah, right? And because they know how to talk to people. And I know how to talk to people. I don't like, and I have enough understanding of diabetes that I can take that understanding and put it into words that you can hear and pick up and use somewhere else. I think that's my whole value to this is that I had to teach myself diabetes because I couldn't let my daughter be unwell. And I'm a good storyteller. Like, I know how to talk. And it's not on purpose. Like, I swear to you, here, I'm going to tell everybody something and we'll let them go. I sent you four topics and I said, ladies' choice. That was the extent of our preparation for today. Okay. And then you texted me a half an hour before going, oh, I forgot to tell you, this is the thing I chose. I didn't read what you sent me. So when we popped on and started talking about it, as you hear me warming up in the first couple of minutes, it's the first time I've considered this today. So, and then I start accessing all the stories I've heard on the podcast and then trying to work my way through it. That's all you're hearing is, that's what you just heard for the last hour. And Erica artfully pointing me at the truths about how people's minds work to keep me on that path, which is, I'm assuming what you would do.
I try.
Which is, I'm assuming what you would do if you were my therapist, is you would keep going, hey, look up, dummy. Keep walking in this direction.
Trying to go back to the theme and the goal.
Right. No, it's beautiful. Anyway, if anybody heard this and doesn't believe in therapy, they you're not paying attention. ErikaForsyth.com. What are your states that you can help people remotely?
California, Oregon, Utah, Florida, and Vermont.
Oh, Vermont sticking?
Yes, Vermont sticking.
Nice.
For now, yes.
Good, good, good. And if you live local to Erica, she will tell you where she's at and you can sit with her and do this.
Yes, we have an office in Pasadena in person, but also, virtual as well.
Again, ErikaForsyth.com. If you don't see what she did this hour with me and think that could help me too, again, I don't think you're paying attention because I couldn't have put these thoughts together without you today. So,
wow. Thank you, Scott. Seriously. Nice compliment.
Oh, Erica, you know I've had a couple of therapists on here before I landed on you. You're the right one. Don't you worry. I saw what was going on. I paid attention. I was like, good conversation, but not right for me. And then I picked through and I was like, Erica works for me. And you know, I'll let you go, but the first reason that I thought that about you is that if I tried to generalize, you wouldn't let me when we were first together. Like, I would try to generalize to be entertaining and you'd be like, no. I was like, oh, she pushing back for it. We're trying to have fun here. And then I was like, oh,
I remember.
Yeah, I was like, she'll be good to talk to about this stuff. So anyway, I love you. So thank you very much.
Oh, thanks, Scott. Bye. I appreciate that. Bye. Oh, gosh. Right.
There you go. That's perfect.
I'm over here blushing.
Don't Jeez blush. Louise. I want to thank the Eversense CGM for sponsoring this episode of the Juice Box Podcast. Learn more about its implantable sensor, smart transmitter, and terrific mobile application at eversensecgm.com/juicebox. Get the only implantable sensor for long-term wear. Get Eversense. A huge thanks to the Contour Next Gen Blood Glucose Meter for sponsoring this episode of the Juice Box Podcast. Learn more and get started today at contournext.com/juicebox. A huge thank you to one of today's sponsors, Gvoke Glucagon. Find out more about Gvoke HypoPen at gvokeglucagon.com/juicebox. You spell that GVOKEGLUCAGON.com/juicebox. If you're not already subscribed or following in your favorite audio app, please take the time now to do that. It really helps the show. And get those automatic downloads set up so you never miss an episode. Thank you so much for listening. I'll be back very soon with another episode of the Juice Box Podcast. The Diabetes Variables series from the Juice Box Podcast goes over all the little things that affect your diabetes that you might not think about, from travel and exercise to hydration and even trampolines. Juiceboxpodcast.com. Go up in the menu and click on Diabetes Variables. Lots of people with autoimmune seem to have trouble with their thyroid, and that's why I've made the Defining Thyroid series. Juiceboxpodcast.com. Click on Defining Thyroid in the menu to find out more. The episode you just heard was professionally edited by Wrong Way Recording. Wrongwayrecording.com.